Our last case for this morning is United States v. Luckett.
May it please the court.
Mr. Schultz.
Counsel for the government, Todd Schultz, Assistant Federal Public Defender, representing the defendant appellant. The district court in this case abused its discretion in imposing an above-guideline sentence of 4 years. The court began the sentencing hearing by correctly calculating the guideline range. The defendant's range was determined to be 12 to 18 months. After considering the factors in the sentencing statute, however, the district court rejected the advice of the guidelines, finding that the guidelines failed to address the facts and seriousness of the case, as well as the crimes committed by the defendant.
So, unlike the last case, I mean, whatever else you may say about this case, you have a fairly lengthy statement from the district court judge why he thinks the guidelines don't capture what was going on here, and he tries very hard to look at this strictly from the fraud point of view. Obviously, the state courts are dealing with other aspects of this behavior, but he sees it as he puts it, fraud on fraud and perhaps on fraud. I mean, it's really a multi-layered problem, and he thinks a significant sentence. It's still 6 years below the statutory maximum, right?
It is, Your Honor. And one other thing that's significant about this case from the defendant's perspective is, unlike within guideline sentences or below guideline sentence, there is no presumption that the judge's above guideline sentence in this case is reasonable. And I agree with the court that the judge, in a rather lengthy statement in his pronouncement of sentence, made it clear his reasoning for picking a 48-month sentence.
And it's also very clear, he says it twice, that he rejects the advice from the Sentencing Commission, which is his prerogative.
He can certainly do that in his discretion, and I agree with the court's assessment that it was the multiple layers of fraud that drove the above-guideline sentence. The judge, I believe, said fraud on fraud on perhaps fraud a number of times, and of course, what the judge was referring to is the fact that this defendant, at the time of the offense, was receiving payments from Social Security as well as food stamps.
So when she's trying to get the personal assistant benefits, she's got to use first her daughter's identity and then somebody else, because if she had used her own identity, that would have made it clear that she was able to work, and the disability benefits would have been imperiled if somebody had caught up with that. You know, and then, you know, same thing, I guess, is true for the food assistance program. There are all kinds of interwoven frauds here.
Well, the district court touched upon the two additional layers of fraud, the Social Security fraud and the food stamp fraud. But significantly, while the court repeatedly referenced fraud on fraud on fraud, the court never took the time to determine what the guideline range would have been if it took into account the amount of loss from the Social Security fraud and the amount of loss from the food stamp
program. Yeah, but it would have been higher.
I don't believe that that's true, Your Honor.
No?
I don't think so, Your Honor. Looking at
would have been lower?
Than the 48 months, yes.
No, not 48 months. The original guideline was 12 to 18?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, if he had considered the various frauds and so on, the compounding of fraud, that the guideline range would have been larger.
In fact, it would have, Your Honor.
So that would have, but that might have led him to make a greater variance, right? Because he knew when he sentenced her to 48 months, he thought the top of the guideline range was 18.
Right.
If instead it was 30, he might have said, all right, we'll sentence her to 60 months.
Your Honor, the only issue I take with that is, if he knew that the aggravating facts that he was choosing to vary upon, the fraud on fraud, when the guideline looked at it said, Judge, we advise you based upon this fraud on fraud on fraud that you find particularly troubling in this case, that we would advise a 24 to 30 month sentence, I don't know that you can say that the judge...
Okay, well, that's a good point. Yeah, you're suggesting he might have been content with a higher guideline range.
Well,
the other thing is that, you know, he was concerned about the horrible physical condition of the woman she was taking care of. I mean, at first he said he wasn't, then he said he was. So.
Well, maybe I was just focusing on at first when he said he wasn't, because I think right. One thing that initially in the transcript he makes clear is that there was a lot of focus on the death of Ms. Cooper and the tragic circumstances surrounding her death, but that he wanted to make it clear that he was sentencing her based upon the fraud right. and not criminal neglect charges that were pending. And I think that in some respects took both the defense and the prosecution by surprise, because I think in gearing up for the sentencing hearing, it was anticipated that the aggravating fact that the court might rely upon to vary upwards would be those circumstances.
Even if it wasn't quite as much as you thought, I don't know why the judge would have made a mistake if he had said, you know, there are frauds where people just lose money. You know, sometimes a lot of money, sometimes not so much. But the nature and circumstances of her offense, this fraud, enabled her to abuse in a hideous way this poor woman. So this was a personally harmful fraud. It wasn't just a money fraud.
Your Honor, but I respectfully disagree. I think the record stops short of concluding what you are claiming, and that is that the victim in this case, Ms. Cooper, suffered as a result of this fraud. I think that the judge makes reference to the fact that this being a fraud occurring over some 6.5 years, there's indication, I believe, in the testimony at the sentencing hearing that for many of those years there was never an issue.
No, but there's no personal care assistant, as far as I can tell from this record. That money was just pocketed, right?
My understanding, Your Honor, reviewing the transcript, is that it was actually the defendant in this case with whom the victim was living that was caring for her, and that the home visits that were conducted at the defendant's home involving this victim, that a number of those, there was nothing alarming. And I think, so I don't think that the court can say, well, he would have been justified just based upon the horrific circumstances. It may be that he could have justified his sentence on that, but I think the judge's remarks are clear that he stopped short of finding that Ms. Cooper was somehow abused by the defendant's actions, and rather, as you had mentioned here at the outset of the argument, he went on and on about fraud on fraud, and he chose to vary 2.5 times what the high end of the guidelines would have called for. And my understanding is that when a judge imposes an extreme variance like that, that he's expected to give careful thought to that.
And I see no reason to think he didn't. I mean, but the thing is, we were going off into the areas of hypotheticals, like what if the Social Security fraud had been charged, and the government comes back and says, well, what if identity theft had been charged? Everybody's kind of, what if this and what if that? And so I was just thinking, well, if we're in the what-if game, you know, what if the judge had looked at the first of the 3553 factors, the nature and circumstances of the offense, and had taken some of those circumstances into account? I'm not sure that would have been error either. And as it was, the judge says this is a complex fraud. She gets a lot of money for it. She's ripping off the government. He says, you know, if frauds like this go on, these programs may just go away altogether and a great number of people would be hurt. I don't see where he's out of line.
I believe that last concern about these programs going away is a factor that is built into the guideline itself. And what the court chose to sentence on was not some hypothetical. I mean, there were 3 frauds
right.
that drove the court's sentence. And so with all respect, when you say that this is the product of careful thought, the court could have easily figured out what the guidelines would have called.
That's not legally required. There's no requirement that when a judge wants to issue a non-guideline sentence, an above-guideline sentence, that he or she peg it to some guidelines measure under the old departure analysis or otherwise. That's just, or recalculate the guidelines range to account for the aggravating circumstances that the judge has identified. That's not required to justify an above-guideline sentence. So if we said that in this case, that would be a new rule.
Well, it may not be required.
Well, the problem is it would make life very, very complicated for the judge, right? Because you're suggesting the judge should figure out, given, you know, aggravating circumstances that would be part of a 3553A analysis, what are the possible different guideline ranges that I should be thinking about, right? Because it's very common for the government to have a whole range of alternative charges to make.
Well, the only thing I would point out is my understanding is the court is correct. It's not legally required, but I believe it was this court's strong advice in the Kirkpatrick case that judges who believe extra crimes justify extra punishment, that those judges consult the guidelines to see what the guidelines would recommend by way of incremental punishment. And in this case...
But the question is whether you want to make this a requirement.
I'm not looking at it... We're not challenging this on a procedural ground. I am arguing to this court that the sentence of 4 years is unreasonable because the judge has no frame of reference. He hasn't decided, I know the range is 24 to 30 month, but here's why, in addition to fraud on fraud on fraud, the guidelines aren't sufficient. He can't be have said to have engaged in careful thought as he chooses a sentence of 4 years with no indication that all the things that he's upset about, the guidelines say 24 to 30 months. And so for those reasons, we ask that the court would vacate the sentence and remand for the imposition of a reasonable sentence.
All right, thank you. Mr. Halleck.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Michael Halleck, and I represent the United States in this matter. Counsel, this court should uphold the 48-month sentence as reasonable. The court did not abuse its discretion by sentencing the appellant to above-guideline sentence. And I'd like to address some of the court's concerns that they discussed with Mr. Schultz. The district court did address the nature and circumstances of the offense in the record, and he stated that he was doing so. As previously stated, the record is thorough. He addressed the fraud upon fraud, which was the concealment of the personal assistance payments in order to keep receiving food stamps, as well as to keep receiving the Social Security disability, the drafting of co-conspirators, that is Mr. Billups, who was also charged, and as well as bringing in the innocent third parties, which was the appellant's daughter, Sherita Luckett, who the chief judge mentioned at sentencing.
Wouldn't it be a good idea for the probation service to put in the pre-sentence report the alternative guidelines calculations?
I can't speak to probation, however, that does seem...
You don't deal with the probation service?
I deal with them. I believe they're part of the judicial branch, but I think that might be a good idea. The judge did speak...
It's not done, though, is it?
It's not. The chief judge did speak to the uncharged conduct, and we would like to speak to the uncharged conduct, which is the aggravated identity theft. Every time that the appellant signed the name of her daughter, Sherita Luckett, to the Home Services timesheet, constitutes aggravated identity theft. And with the aggravated identity theft, the sentence would be, I believe, 54 months, because the aggravated identity theft carries a mandatory statutory minimum of 24 months. The chief judge spoke to the seriousness of the offense as well. And when speaking to the seriousness of the offense, he mentioned the fraud upon fraud, as Mr. Schultz has mentioned that he mentioned that many times. He also spoke, the chief judge, to deterrence. He stated that this program, the Medicaid Home Services Program, which is funded by the federal government as well as the state of Illinois, is necessary to our society. And this individual has defrauded this program. And as long as individuals continue to keep defrauding this program, there is the danger that the program will no longer exist. And particularly in the Southern District of Illinois, the fraud to this program is very high. And the chief judge stated that he wanted to send a strong message of deterrence both to this individual, the appellant, who had been doing this since September of 2006 when she entered into this scheme to defraud, up until the death, the unfortunate, tragic death of Dorothy Cooper in 2013, in March of 2013.
So is it your position that it was actually correct for the judge to try to put to one side the criminal neglect? I take it the state is pursuing criminal neglect charges. Or do you think that should have been understood as something making this particular fraud worse than just stealing money kinds of frauds?
Well, respectfully, both, Your Honor. I believe the criminal neglect, which is a separate charge, and the appellant is charged, is facing two charges of criminal neglect in the state court, but also the neglect which resulted in death does increase the fraud in this case. The sentencing guidelines address the fraud exclusively based on, almost exclusively based on the amount of fraud, which was $70,000 in this case. They do not speak to the other factors, such as the fraud which actually led to the death of an individual. So I believe that it's appropriate to address the heinous nature of the fraud in this case, but also the judge clearly stated, I'm not handling a case of criminal neglect resulting in homicide, because that is for the state courts. If there are not any other questions, I will rest on my brief.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your time ran out, Mr. Schultz, but I'll give you one more minute if you would like it.
The government had referenced aggravated identity theft as a possibility. I don't believe the words aggravated identity theft were mentioned by the court when it discussed fraud on fraud on fraud. And although the government suggests today that the defendant's daughter was an innocent third party, the court never made a finding that, in fact, the defendant had used her daughter's name without her permission, and the government acknowledged that it was not certain what role the daughter played, meaning she may have, in fact, been involved in this fraud herself, as it was uncertain what she knew and when she knew it. And I would just note that with respect to the issue of the care that was performed that was either performed or not performed with respect to the victim, that was not something that drove this court's sentence. It was the fraud on fraud on fraud. The court at times makes reference, there's some suggestion by defense counsel that to the extent services weren't provided, it was because our client, who has stage 4 chronic kidney disease, was in failing health and couldn't provide the services. The judge says maybe that was so, maybe it wasn't, I don't know. But to suggest somehow that the court justified this sentence based on the tragic circumstances, I think, is at odds with the transcript.
I don't think that's what counsel was suggesting. Counsel was saying the judge could have legitimately taken that into account without violating any rule of law, but did not.
Right, but I believe that this court has to judge the reasonableness of the district court sentence based upon
absolutely,
the facts it said, not some hypothetical that might have happened.
Yes, of course.
I think it would strengthen your case if the judge added on months or years because of the criminal neglect, right? Because then you're stepping on the toes of the state, right? She's being prosecuted. So would she be able to deduct part of her federal sentence, right? Or because otherwise there'd be... So suppose the state court sentences her for whatever is the appropriate sentence for criminal neglect. Then she would say, well, wait, actually, the judge, you know, in the federal case, he added years onto my sentence because of the criminal neglect. So you can't... So you have a standoff there, right?
I don't know, Your Honor. I mean,
you have
I'm glad
multiple
that...
Multiple sentencing for the same misconduct.
But
that
I
would be why the federal court should be very careful not to be imposing a sentence that may duplicate a sentence in a state prosecution of the same person.
I'm just glad that I made the argument I made here today. And
all right. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate you making your argument. Thanks to the government as well. The case will be taken under advisement and the court will stand in recess.